Up next, we're going to have the Behind the Bureau section. We have two CNS reporters here with us this week. I'll let them introduce themselves.
I'm Zach Selby.
I'm Alban Guichard.
And they're going to talk about their articles that were published yesterday. Which one of you wants to go first?
Okay, go first, Zach.
Yeah, sure, I'll go first.
So I guess to start, just kind of give us a brief rundown of what you covered.
Right. So my story primarily focused on high school heat stroke prevention and all the sorts of equipment and adjustment schools may or may not have made in light of the University of Maryland football player Jordan Bennett's death in June. Basically, it's not really anything that's necessarily new to them as far as heat stroke prevention. But since McNair died, it's been sort of a, you know, all hands on deck sort of approach towards things. The county has been able to provide them with whatever they need. They have tubs. Most of these schools have athletic trainers that kind of facilitate when practice can be held, what kind of equipment and the other things that they can use during practice. And it's kind of been, like I said, just sort of a every man kind of just is focused on making sure that all the players are safe and nothing terrible happens to them during practice.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that the impact of Jordan McNair's death for the university football team has spread into the community? I think it's pretty clear based on
I think it has. Specifically, I was talking to a head coach from Eleanor Roosevelt High School, Thomas Green, and he told me about a scenario where now the players are, you know, since McNair died, they've been more vocal, especially with the athletic trainers, about how they feel as far as their physical well-being. If they're hungry, the athletic trainers will give them food before practice. If they're dehydrated, they'll let the coaches or trainers know. Whereas before McNair's death, he said they probably wouldn't have said anything about it. They probably would have, you know, just tried to fight through it and get through practice as best they could. So I definitely think that it has sort of not necessarily shocked people into doing more the more safe practice as far as players are concerned, but I do think it's people are just more have a heightened awareness of what's going on with their bodies and being sure that they're safe during practice, especially in this heat.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think going forward they'll continue to do? Like what additional steps do you think they'll take?
I think that they're probably going to be doing a lot of the same stuff that they're doing now. So they use wet bulb globe thermometers that monitor like the heat index, the temperature, the wind, a lot of different factors. And I would imagine that they're probably going to use those a lot more because what they do based on those readings is that they dictate how long they can practice, how long the breaks are, and what kind of equipment they can use. So I would certainly imagine that that's going to be a bigger emphasis now. But yeah, I think there's going to be just a continued heightened awareness. I don't think there's going to be a lot of things that they're going to necessarily be doing differently. I just think there's going to be a more tighter and stricter practice around with the things that they're already doing.
Right. And I'm sure that'll continue to be a big topic of discussion, especially at the university, considering everything that's going on with the football team. Alban, do you want to tell everyone what you were working on this week?
Yeah, sure. So I wrote about the Equal Rights Amendment because I was really surprised when I did some research about this amendment that it was not actually added to the Constitution, even though it was passed in Congress in 1972. So that was a while ago. And apparently they need 3/4 of the states to ratify it, and like only 35 states did. And now, because of Trump's presidency and obviously the Me Too movement, a lot of people have been pushing for states to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment, because I think it's really important for them, for the country, and for like justice, because like in courts, women are not protected as much as men, because it's not written in the Constitution that they're all equal and they have equal rights. So I was really interested in that. I talked to Katie Horner, which is, she launched a new campaign called Virginia Ratify ERA. And basically it's a campaign to promote Virginia states to vote for the ratification, because they're gonna have a session in January. And it is very likely that the Equal Rights Amendment will be ratified by Virginia, and Virginia would thus become the 38th state to do that. And 38th is like the 3/4 majority, which is required for an amendment to be officially added to the Constitution.
So you mentioned the Equal Rights Amendment has been sitting passed, but not in the Constitution since 72, right? What's the implication going to be when it actually gets put into the Constitution?
The implication is going to be that legally, in courts, women will have the same protection, for example, for a case based on gender discrimination. It will be the same as race or religious discrimination, which is not the case now.
Mm-hmm.
It's called a strict scrutiny, I think. And for now, they don't have strict scrutiny because gender equality is not officially written in the Constitution. So on the legal aspect, the implication would be easier protection for women in courts. And obviously, for the symbol of it, just having gender equality written down in the American Constitution, that would be a big step toward equality in general.
Both Zach's story and Alban's story are up on cnsmaryland.org right now. You can go find them there. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.